Water safety for the summer. No one thinks a drowning or boating accident will happen to them. And when those things happen, they happen in an instant. Nationwide, more than 3,500 people will die from accidental drowning each year, and many others will suffer brain damage. Of course, learning to swim is an important preventative measure. So is wearing a life jacket and being aware of conditions such as water temperature and currents. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What kind of recreation on or near the water do you look forward to every summer? Do you take time to brush up on safety regulations and techniques? Do you know the law, whether you're on a lake or at a beach, about life jackets, snorkeling, use of flotation devices, and more? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As much fun as it is to enjoy Maine's waters, whether swimming, boating, surfing, or just hanging out at the beach, these activities can be dangerous. Today, we're going to learn about how to minimize risk and prevent hazards whenever in and around the water. Joining me in the studio, Susie Boconfuso. She is head swim coach at the Casco Bay branch of the YMCA in Cumberland County. She was a stroke coach for renowned ocean swimmer Pat Gallant Charette. Carrie Bonifant is here, CEO and instructor trainer at Lighthouse Health and Safety, which is an American Red Cross licensed training provider and strategic partner. And Captain Scott Bartlett, Director of Operations for Freedom Boat Club of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. This show is for you. What questions do you have about water safety? Do you kayak or paddleboard or fish? Does your family go to water parks? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Kind of a late season for boating and swimming and kayaking and surfing and things like that this year. I checked the water temperature before we came in, Carrie, and the Casco Bay, it's 50 degrees. How dangerous is 50 degrees if you fall in? It doesn't sound that bad.
It's quite dangerous if you fall in at 50 and you didn't expect to.
So what should somebody expect?
Very cold. It's going to be very cold. You'll probably have the gasp reflex where you'll try to breathe in real quick. So try to keep your head above water if you can. If you're near something, try to grasp it. Try to find something to hold on to. But you should always be wearing your life jacket when you're near the water, even if you don't expect to go in.
I have a feeling this is going to be a theme today. Always be wearing your life jacket. Captain Bartlett, I know that the law is that if you're 10 and under and on a boat, you must be wearing your life jacket. But if you're older, there just has to be one on the boat. I'm not supposed to be subjective on this program. I'm supposed to be an objective reporter, but I think that sounds kind of dumb.
Well, it varies on the situation, really. But you're right. 10 years old, that's when they don't have to wear their life jacket anymore. We always recommend that they do. What's very common now is the Type 3 inflatable life vests, which, you know, they don't have those big goofy orange ones that, you know, nobody likes to wear. But there is a law now that only counts as a life jacket if you're wearing it. So if you are approached by the Warden Service or the Marine Patrol and they ask you to hold up a life jacket for everyone on the vessel and you hold up one of those Type 3 inflatables, it does not count unless you're wearing it.
Do you find that that's what most people who boat with your boat club want to use is the Type 3 inflatables?
You know, most of the time, the people who have them, they purchase them. We don't really supply the inflatables, but they bring them with them because they're comfortable. And what I recommend as a captain and a main guide is if you have children, let them pick out their own life jacket. You know, let them find one that's comfortable because, they have to wear it or they should wear it. And so if they pick it out, then they're more likely to not have an issue with it.
For adults, though, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, if you're in a kayak and you dump, if you're on a sailboat and you get knocked overboard by the boom, having a life jacket in the boat doesn't help you at all.
It really doesn't. And that's why we recommend wearing them. Like you had mentioned, the water temps being 50 degrees on the lakes right now, and especially the ocean, you only have, less than a couple of minutes before you start to lose, your dexterity and it really impedes your thinking, your decision-making process. So you don't have a lot of time, and if you don't have one right handy, you're in some serious trouble.
Susie, before you came, before we went on air, I asked you how many swim lessons were going on right now at what people call the Freeport Y. I know it's got a more formal name than that. How many right now have you got coming through?
Well, at the Casco Bay branch right now, we're running, you know, right around 500 swim lessons per week with group lessons and private swim lessons.
A lot of people enroll their children in swim lessons if they happen to be lucky enough to live in a town that has a pool or a lake where lessons are offered. But I know a lot of adults are hesitant to start, hesitant to admit they don't know how to swim. What advice do you have for them?
Well, I would have them like just come into a YMCA or any learn to swim program, get comfortable talking to the aquatic staff around them. Feel free to ask questions like, how deep is the pool? How long is the pool? And then what would I need to do to learn? And just start a conversation with us. And that's really going to lead to some great answers and some clues to kind of get you started.
How long is typical? Say somebody's 40 years old and decides, okay, I'm going to learn how to swim. I'm going to go to my local Y. I'm going to find a swim instructor. What should I expect? How long will it take before I feel comfortable in the water, in the swimming pool, in the lake?
You know, that's a really great question. And it depends on the person. And it depends on their personal experience from previous water exposure. It depends on you know, their medical condition. That might take a little longer. And it also depends on really what they're willing to do. Like, some people, it's going to take them 4 lessons. Some people, it's going to take them a year before they're really comfortable. And we really try to tailor it to the individual themselves.
Mm-hmm. I know some people who have really come a long way, gone from not being able to swim to being able to swim the Peaks to Portland swim race, for example. So, you know, you really can have pretty high aspirations, can't you?
Oh, yeah. You can totally have great aspirations. We've got people that just want to come in and learn how to swim to their dock and back. And then I have people that are training for Peaks to Portland or the upcoming half Ironman in Old Orchard Beach this summer. So we kind of run the gambit on what personal goals are.
Carrie, I know about a year ago, the Red Cross launched a big initiative to get more people to learn how to swim. I think the goal was 500,000 nationwide and a lot more lifeguards. Do you have a sense of how that's going? Are you partnering with the Red Cross on that effort?
Not necessarily on that one. We do offer a learn to swim program with Lighthouse Health and Safety. It's more private lessons that we do, but we do a lot of lifeguard training.
A lot of lifeguard training.
Yes.
How is Maine in terms of lifeguards? Are there enough?
No. No, facilities call me all the time looking for guards. People are calling me looking for training, which is great. Today we have a class of 34 lifeguards with 4 of my instructors running right now. So we're training them. We're getting them out there. But if you're interested in lifeguarding, you'll have a job. So take the training.
Okay. And how much training is involved in getting good enough to get hired at a state beach or a community pool?
So lifeguards have to be strong swimmers. So you can take the swim lessons. Start there if you need them. At least level 4 is great. But we offer a blended learning training, so you have about 6 to 8 hours of work online that you do before you come into the classroom. So you end up learning pretty much everything you need to know before you come to class, and you even take the CPR written exam. And then you spend about 2.5 days with instructors doing skills and learning everything you need to know. It's very, very intense. It's intense training.
If you'd like to join the conversation about water safety, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. You know, I think there are times in which people go into a situation thinking about safety. I'm going to go out on a canoe with my family on vacation, I'm thinking about water safety, or I'm going to go to a beach that, you know, is known to have some currents. But there are times, and I'm thinking about going to the water park, going over to a house where there's a, maybe a cookout, where there's a swimming pool or a pond, where you're not thinking about water safety. And I'm wondering if you all have advice about those situations.
Conversations about water safety should be happening every time a family goes near any sort of water, whether it's a beach, a pool, a river. We're going up to camp with friends. And parents should really talk to their kids about what the expectation is. You know, how far are you going to go in? Are you going to be wearing your life jacket? What happens if you need help? And really just include different things that could happen. And if you do that every time you go to the water and you have like a little family plan, then that's going to be a great way to keep that conversation going.
How old do kids need to be before they really process that well and understand what the conversation is about? And at what age ought there be no expectation that the child has understood what you're telling them about water?
Well, that's great. What we do at the YMCA of Southern Maine is we teach parent-child lessons. Kids and parents come in ages, you know, like 4 months and up. And at that point, it's really more parents teaching the children when it's okay to get in the water. We play games where they sit and we sing them a little song, and then we give them permission to jump. And then we teach the kids to blow bubbles, and we teach the kids to reach and pull, and we teach them to roll on their back. And that's part of our process with very young children. Once they get to ages 3 to 5, then they start doing lessons without their parents. And again, they have to wait to be invited into the water.
Okay, so go ahead.
Another good thing with little kids, too, is to teach them to say something before they jump in. 1, 2, 3, ready, set, go. Something like that. Even the really, really little ones. Even in the parent-child ones, you're 6 months old. Always get them in the habit of saying something. Because that lets the adults around know the kid's jumping in the water. It's great that they get permission. I love that. Yeah. Too. So add the ready, set, go. 1, 2, 3. I've had stories of people say, geez, you know, the reason my granddaughter's alive is because she took your swim lessons. Because they open the pool this time of year, the door wasn't locked, and the little girl, they hear 1, 2, 3, and they're going, what's that? And one parent books it to the pool because that was the girl's signal. And by the time they got to her, she had turned around and reached for the wall.
Because the scariest thing about drowning is that it's silent.
It's very silent.
Yeah. Captain Bartlett, I want to ask you about Freedom Boat Club and what kind of, if somebody's a member of the club, what do they need to know before they're allowed to take a boat out? What kind of safety measures do they need to be up to speed on?
Well, first you should come down and check us out and become a member. But great question, because once you sign up with our club at any of the three locations, whether it's Yarmouth Boatyard, Four Points Marina, or Moose Landing Marina, Naples, you're required to have skills training with a licensed sea captain. So we have 4 licensed captains on our staff, and we schedule you to come in, and we go over an hour and a half classroom session with you. It covers the basics and navigational and, you know, safety and boat skills. And then we take you for a 2 to 3 hour on-the-water training on the boat that you'll actually be using at the club. And we take you and go through the water skills with you, docking and close quarters. And we bring you out to some of the outer islands in Casco Bay, like Eagle, and we try to look for a little bit of rough water. And we do offshore certification. So it's about a 4-hour process before you can actually make a reservation and take a boat out.
In your experience, what is the most likely unsafe thing to happen on a boat?
Believe it or not, most of your boating injuries happen while boarding or disembarking a boat, you know, tripping, falling off the boat onto the dock or, you know, what have you. So that's really the most common. Other ones that are very common are the operator of the vessel doesn't alert the passengers to, hey, I'm powering up, or hey, I'm slowing down. Because you imagine you're going 25, 30 miles an hour in a boat, and all of a sudden he lets off the gas, and guess what? You know, you go flying forward. And same thing if you take off fast. Everybody falls down, and some injuries can happen.
I heard a phrase this morning that I'd never heard before, and I've been on boats my whole life, something called boater's hypnosis. This is from the Occupational Safety and Health Organization. Condition brought on by the effects of sun, wind, noise, vibration, and motion experienced during a day of boating. Boater's hypnosis can slow your reaction time as much as you are if you are legally intoxicated. I thought that was really interesting. And we all, you know, everybody's probably nodding like, oh, yeah, I know that feeling, that feeling, or whoa. But I can understand disembarking after spending a day on the lake can be, or out on the ocean can be a lot different experience than the beginning of the day.
Where you really notice it, you know, spend a day on the ocean and then, you know, that evening go home and take a shower. And when you get into the shower, you put your hand out and hold onto the wall because you start really swaying back and forth. And you don't really notice it until.
And important to have that self-awareness.
Right.
We'll go to Jay, who's calling from Southwest Harbor. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to throw in my two cents. I'm about 70 years old. I've been fishing and boating my whole life, and I've lost three friends to accidents going overboard without life jackets. And I myself never wore one for years and years, fishing for 16 years, I never wore one. But now I wear one all the time because I guess I was stubborn enough to think that I was immune to drowning. But having been over the side, I the second time I went, I was wearing a vest. And I can tell you it was reassuring to know that I had it on. So I just wanted to comment that even if you're a stubborn person and you think you can swim pretty well, it's probably a good thing to just think about having something on. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, Jay, let me ask you, when you were wearing the life vest and you went over, was it one of those new inflatable kind, or was it old-fashioned orange life vest?
No, it was an inflatable. It was the vest type inflatable. I wear a horseshoe now. It's very uninvasive, but the vest is even easier to work in. A lot of the fishermen around here in the Cranberry Isles and elsewhere on the coast used to like wearing those because you didn't even know you had it on.
Yeah. Do you find that there's a change in attitude, has been a change in the last 10 or 20 years among commercial fishermen?
Yes, I do. I think people are fishing smarter, working smarter, and I think we all have a tendency to try and be progressive in our thinking, and I see that happening with a lot of younger fishermen especially, but even the older ones that I'm around are being more proactive in thinking about safety.
And before I let you go, I also want to ask you about swimming. I don't know if it's true or mythology, but the word is that there's so many people out on the water who don't know how to swim. Do you find that to be true? And do you find that people are making an effort to learn to swim?
Actually, I think it's probably different where I live now. I live in Oregon and I know a lot of commercial fishermen there, but I think they tend to be more involved and more willing. There's a sort of stubbornness, I think, amongst a lot of us that haven't learned to swim. I did at an early age, but I think, yeah, people are giving into that, but I think there's still a bastion of people that just think, well, it's too late for me to learn, and so they won't.
Well, Jay, I really appreciate you calling in and offering the perspective of a commercial fisherman. So many in Maine, and really, really important perspective to having this program. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions about water safety. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Husson University, committed to strengthening Maine's future by preparing the business, health, and communication professionals of tomorrow. Husson.edu. Fallbrook Woods, a Maine-owned assisted living community in Portland, supporting the unique needs and individual styles of those with memory impairment. Fallbrookwoods.com. And Livingston Hughes Surveyors, celebrating 25 years of service and a proud supporter of public broadcasting in Maine. LivingstonHughes.com.
In border towns across Mexico, thousands of migrants wait for a chance to make asylum claims at U.S. ports of entry.
Every 2 hours, I go ask immigration police if there's space. If there's not, I have to wait longer.
A look at the backlog in Matamoros, Mexico, where some have been waiting for months, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. Does your organization or business own a fleet of vehicles? When they come to the end of their usefulness for your business, have you considered donating these vehicles to Maine Public? There may be some compelling reasons for you to consider this. It's easy. The vehicles will be towed away at no cost. You'll receive a donation receipt, and you'll be recognized for your generous support for the good cause that is Maine Public. A big thanks at this time to both Portland Mattress Makers and Connectivity Point, which provides infrastructure for voice, data, video, and security applications, for being the first two to step forward. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on support.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are learning about safety measures in and around the water. Joining me, Carrie Bonifon, CEO and instructor at Lighthouse Health and Safety. Captain Scott Bartlett, Director of Operations for Freedom Boat Club of Maine. And Susie Bocanfuso, head swim coach with the YMCA of Cumberland County. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Corporal John McDonald, Public Information Officer for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Thanks for calling in, Corporal McDonald.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks, Jennifer, for having me.
I want to ask you what you want to add to our conversation about life jackets. We've already mentioned that if you're under 10, you must be wearing a life jacket if you're in a boat. What else do we need to know?
Yeah, that's right. If you're 10 years old or younger, state law requires that you wear one. But we, you know, at the Warden Service, certainly encourage everyone to wear them. I think in general we feel that people may not properly assess the risks associated with being on the water and not wearing your life jacket. And really, I think it's you can draw the distinction, I think, between, you know, being in an automobile and not wearing your life jacket or not wearing your seat belt. And, thinking about, would you have the time to put your seatbelt on before you get into that collision that you can see coming? And the answer is no. And really the same is true for boating. You know, being able to get to your life jacket and putting it on in time, really, it doesn't happen in the real world.
What are the rules for sort of a jet ski or a paddle board or a kayak? Are these the same as if you were in a larger boat?
No, if anyone that's operating a personal watercraft or more commonly called jet skis, you do have to wear one. And there are other scenarios, too. If you're being towed by a boat on skis, the person being towed has to have a life jacket on as well. So those are some safety measures that are in law that people need to abide by.
I'll ask you a question from Lonnie. He says, my wife and I paddleboard, and my wife goes out without a life preserver. I think the law is that it's required. What are the main points I can share with her to make her better comply with wearing a life preserver?
Well, that's true. Paddleboarding is, and many other water-related sports are free of motors. You know, kayaks and canoes have certainly become much more popular, I think, in more recent years. And if you choose not to wear a life jacket, then it's, really the onus is on you for scrambling back to your board or your canoe, whatever it is, and being able to safely get back to shore. And what we're seeing, you know, through our history of being involved in these scenarios on the water is that, even people that think they can swim well, or in fact they do swim well, if you unexpectedly exit your boat, the chances of you surviving that statistically is very slim if you don't have a life jacket on. And the reason being, you may, you know, sustain an injury, or you may have someone else in your boat to think about, whether it's your child or another loved one that's hurt themselves. You may be able to get back to shore yourself. But then having the burden of taking that injured person back to shore may mean the difference between you surviving that trip or not.
Mm. So. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about drinking and boating. What are the laws about having beer on a boat?
Well, it's essentially the same as a motor vehicle, a car. You cannot drink and drive if you're under the drinking age, which is 20 or less in Maine. You can't have any alcohol in your system, but We're hoping that the culture is changing. I think over the years, it's been more socially acceptable to drink in boat, as is, you know, drink in snowmobile and those types of recreational vehicle activities. But we do think we're seeing a trend in people realizing that that is not safe to do, and it's in fact against the law too. So we certainly want people to enjoy their boating experience and not have to encounter us on the water being intoxicated. And unfortunately, you may spend the rest of your weekend in jail rather than boating and having a good time with your friends. So not only is it not safe, it's against the law.
All right. I think Captain Bartlett wants to say or ask you something. Go ahead.
Hey, sure. John. Scott Bartlett here. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, just in kind of tagging on with Jen's question about drinking on a boat, I know as a Maine guide, taking clients out all the time, is it legal to have open container for clients on a boat as long as they're not operating the vessel?
Well, the strict letter of the law is that you are in a public place in a boat, and drinking in public is illegal. There are some details that we would have to get out very thick books to look in and to go over those details. But if you are in a space on a boat that would be considered private, like a big cuddy cabin or a cabin cruiser, and you weren't driving, that could be considered legal to do so as long as you're not driving. But for the sake of an open boat in a public place, it would be illegal by the letter of the law to have an open container because you're in a public place. If we were to strictly adhere to that, we would be facing many, many situations where people do have open containers in boats that aren't drivers. So the way we do it, the way we enforce it typically is that we focus on the drivers and we caution the operators that, okay, if you're going to be drinking, don't bring attention to yourselves, be responsible about it. And that's the way we choose to enforce that law.
Corporal McDonald, anything you'd like to add before we let you go?
Well, this whole topic is very important. We're just now getting into the season that we find ourselves on the water a lot, both as game wardens and people just trying to enjoy the Maine summer. So we really appreciate the emphasis put on this, Jennifer, and with life jackets, with personal watercraft, and drinking and driving, it's really, really important. And hopefully we can, because of this, even if one or two people choose to change their behavior, we'll have a very safe summer. So thank you, Jennifer.
Well, thank you for joining us. That's Corporal John McDonald, the Public Information Officer for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. We're going to go to Brian calling from Washington, Maine. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, folks. I'll keep this brief. I consider myself an experienced recreational boater, and I can relate to what's being talked about on your program. Twice I encountered some pretty serious situations whereby I and my guests were not wearing life preservers. And one was on Rangeley Lake, and we encountered a microberth that came out of the west. And we had time to put on our life preservers, and none of us thought about it. And we got caught in 10-foot swells and waves that could have tipped what I regarded as a pretty large boat. And we managed to get to the other side of the lake by the skin of our teeth. And another time, we were on the Kennebec River, entering the mouth of Popham Beach, and without a moment's notice, we found ourselves in 20-foot swells that were coming in on the tide. And again, myself and my guest did not have our life jackets on. I do not drink. My guests are not allowed to drink on the boat. And we could have found ourselves in underwater. I just wanted to share that with you folks. I do now demand that I wear a life preserver and that my friends wear life preservers. And I feel much safer about that. I also ask them if they do know how to swim. And we don't venture out to the mouth of the Kennebec anymore. So I'll leave you with that, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian, for your call. And an email from Jim. I have attended safety demos for canoeing, and one of the things that amazed me was when we were told to try to put on a PFD when you are already in the water. It is much more difficult than you think. That is why they should always be worn when in a boat. I can imagine. We're going to go to Nate calling from Damariscotta Lake. Hi, Nate. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you guys? So last summer, I have a house on Damariscotta Lake, and my best friend, Kristen McKellar, we were swimming together, and she was hit by a boater from Massachusetts and killed. Mm. And what that raised for me was we have a problem on our inland lake where life preservers aren't going to help. And when you are kayaking and canoeing and paddleboarding and swimming and you're going up against a power boat, it's not going to end well. And I'm wondering, do we need legislative solutions here, or what can we do to stop? Every year you hear about multiple people being hit by boats and killed. And a lot of people like to be able to peacefully swim without worrying about being killed by an engine frost. And how can we do both on the lake now?
Yeah, so,
or
you
do
know,
we just have to stop swimming and paddleboarding and hope that everybody else is going to be paying attention. People are on their phones driving. They're also on their boats texting. So,
yeah, Nate, I'm so sorry to hear about your friend. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, so, Nate, so unfortunately, you know, people just don't follow the rules that are in place already. So I know on the inland lakes, you know, within 200 feet of any shoreline, it's headway speed only or no wake zone. So, you know, typically people who are swimming or kayaking, you know, canoeing, whatever, you know, they have the right to go anywhere in the lake, but the safest spot is within 200 feet of a shoreline. So that being said, though, a lot of people don't follow the rules of the road. And that's where we have to support our local game wardens and local law enforcement people and turn in those people if you can get the registration numbers or ID the boats and call, because there are laws in place to protect those people. Unfortunately, just like motor vehicle laws, people just don't follow the rules.
Yeah, Nate, again, so sorry. I know that a lot of people who swim on lakes, who, you know, train for triathlons and things like that, do so in groups with brightly colored caps and early in the morning.
Yeah, early in the morning is when, you know, there's not a lot of traffic on lakes. And we encourage them to use kayakers as well as guides. And they wear bright colored caps and swim buoys. And often this time of year, they're in wetsuits as well. But, you know, if you're looking at a perspective of just enjoying yourself recreationally versus being an outdoor marathon swimmer, you know, we would encourage people to stay within the swim zones, stay inside the buoyed areas as well, because when you go past that, you know, the lifeguards that are on duty or your designated person might not be able to help you in time.
Nate, thank you for your call. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lamy Wellahan Shoes, committed to reducing greenhouse gases at all their locations throughout Maine, because what's good for the environment is also good for business. And Ogunquit Playhouse, with the Broadway musical 42nd Street, featuring Sally Struthers on stage through July 13th. OgunquitPlayhouse.org.
As fears about climate change grow, would reflecting the sun's rays away from the Earth help control global temperatures?
Each decision will change the weather conditions of some people more than others in different ways. Who would you trust to have such power?
I'm John Donvan. On the next Intelligence Squared US, four experts debate the science and validity of engineering solar radiation.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock.
On the next Fresh Air, the sustainable food revolution. We talk with Amanda Little, author of The Fate of Food, about efforts to create a global food supply for a world that will be hotter, drier, and more crowded. It includes meat cultured in a lab, 3D printer food, aquaculture, and indoor vertical farming. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7. right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are learning about safety measures in and around the water. Joining me, Carrie Bonifond, CEO and instructor at Lighthouse Health and Safety, Captain Scott Bartlett, Director of Operations for Freedom Boat Club of Maine, and Susie Boconfuso, head swim coach with the YMCA of Cumberland County. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. An earlier caller was talking about how quickly conditions can change, Scott. It is astonishing sometimes, isn't it?
It really is. And one of the things that we stress in the Freedom Boat Club training is weather. And I try to tell everybody to really try to become a weather geek and really download weather apps and pay attention the night before and the morning of. And we push handheld VHF radios if you don't have an installed one and go to the WX channel 01 and get the 24-hour, you know, constant weather reminders. But the thing is, it's like our weather here changes from the morning to the afternoon to the evening. And if you're going to spend a day on the water, especially if you're going to get out on an island or somewhere in the ocean, you really have to pay attention to the tides, to the currents, and the weather forecast, because you can go out in a beautiful, flat, sunny, you know, 80-degree day, and then by afternoon, the temperature drops 15 degrees, and there's, you know, 3 to 5 foot chop, and, you know, it's crazy how it changes so fast. And if you're not prepared for that, that's when you get yourself into trouble, no matter how good a swimmer you are or whether you're wearing your life jacket or not. I mean, you can put yourself in a bad situation quickly if you don't pay attention to the weather.
Go to Elizabeth, who's calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to add to the conversation about swimming pool safety. I am 55 years old, but when I was 4 years old, I lost my older sister to a swimming pool accident. And the circumstances were that she was invited to a swimming pool party by friends of hers, and it was a group of 10-year-olds, and the parents decided not to stay in and around the pool, and she opted to use the swimming pool slide, went down the slide backwards, and hit her head on the bottom of the pool. Mm. She spent a number of days in the hospital and then passed away. She was an excellent swimmer, but without anyone there to help react to the situation, too much time was lost and her life was lost. So my only comment is, and I can be quick, is that I don't believe that any age child is safe to swim without adult supervision, because in an instant, two families' lives were shattered.
Oh, Elizabeth, I'm so sorry.
I would agree with you that parental supervision is vital, even with a lifeguard on duty. You know, if you're vigilant about watching your children and taking the time to check in with them, that accidents like that can be drastically reduced. And sometimes what we see is even with parents there, they can be distracted by things like cell phones. And when we're near water, we really just need to put those down and pay attention to what's happening in front of us.
And when with our kids, make sure that they know the predetermined signal from the parent or chaperone. My kids know when we're in a public place, water or not. When they hear their name, they stop and turn and look at me. And when we're in the water, they know as soon as they hear their name, they stop.
Exactly.
You know, kids... It's tough because kids love water and we love to let them get in the water, but we really have to have a responsible adult. And as much as I love my babysitters and my nannies, the younger ones, they're not responsible adults.
Yeah, and lifeguards in general, we're not babysitters.
Oh, definitely not.
Our job is to scan the water to make sure that people are being safe, to make sure that we can see everybody. You know, there might be times where we blow our whistle and we just have kids stop and look and listen to us, and we explain what they're doing wrong in a safety context. But even when that happens, it takes our attention away from being able to scan the pool. So that conversation has to be brief, and then we need to get back to our job.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your call. If you're with a child and you're not a swimmer yourself, and you see the child go under, maybe at a river or a lake, can you do anything?
Absolutely. What we teach for a lot of our group lessons that come through is a technique called reach, throw, don't go. And what that means is we encourage them first to look for a lifeguard. If there's no lifeguard, look for an adult. If there's no adult, then what they can do is lay down on their belly and reach their arm out and say, grab on, in a loud voice. And then they pull them into the side. If you're not within arm's reach, we encourage them to find a tool. A tool can be an oar, it can be a pool noodle, it can be a long stick.
A towel.
And
a rope, a throw buoy, anything.
Yeah. And then again, it's grab on in a really loud voice and pull them in and tell them to grab the wall. If you can't reach them at all, what we encourage them to do is stand up and throw that item, that tool, at their head, because that might be the only thing you can see on that swimmer, and then tell them to grab on and swim to the side. That way, you're still able to help, but you're not putting yourself at risk.
And whenever you're near the water, look around before the emergency happens. So if you know where the pile of noodles is, or, you know, where are the noodles? Where's this? Where's that? Think about your surroundings. Look at what you can do. Is there a tree branch here that I could grab? You know, what would I do if my friend fell in right now, type of thing? And it's not a matter of being paranoid, just being prepared.
And that goes, too, for, you know, not just poolside or lakeside with that type of stuff. It's preparation. So even if you're out boating, safety, mm-hmm. you know, familiarize yourself with the fire extinguishers, the lifeguards. Life vests.
Survival suits.
Yeah, survival suits, if they have them, first aid kits, you know, all that type of stuff. And if you know where they are, you can react much quicker.
Jane on Facebook writes, I was wondering if you're going to speak about the signs of drowning. I just read an article yesterday and found out they are very different than the way drowning is depicted on movies. That's right. It's very rare that someone is thrashing around, right?
They won't be thrashing. A lot of times a distress swimmer won't be making much forward progress, but sometimes we think, oh, they're just playing, or maybe they're bobbing, or it's a child doing the hand-over-hand wall crawling, something like that. Active drowning victims can slip underwater silently and nothing is above the surface, and you can't see, you can't hear it, they can't scream out. You might just see little ripples in the surface of the water.
John sends an email, are lakes warm enough to swim in yet? How long should we wait? How do you know when it's safe? And I'm guessing the answer is yes, if you have a very good wetsuit.
Yeah, right now I was actually on Sebago Lake yesterday, and the water temp was 47.1 degrees. So
that's cold.
Yeah, full wetsuit if you want to go in. You won't last long without one.
All right. How do you know when it's warm enough? I know that swimming pools are usually, what, between 77 and 82 degrees? So what's,
if they're heated.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best thing to do is, again, check some of the weather apps. Or a lot of times the local news, when they start the beach and lake reports and things, will report water temperature.
And listen to your body. If you get in and you're cold, get out. Well, and look at the little
I'd have to be in the Florida Keys then.
oftentimes children, they see other people are playing and having fun, and they think,
right.
Well, my buddy's in the water still, so I can stay too. And then they get too cold too fast.
It does seem as though kids are impervious, though. They're in the water way colder than adults are, aren't they?
Yeah, and then their lips are going to turn blue and they're going to start shivering. And we as adults say, oh, they're having fun.
Right.
You got to get them out of the water, warm them up a little bit, and then let them get back in.
Right. People don't realize that. You could be on an 80-degree day in the middle of July, and you could still get hypothermia.
Yeah.
You know, it's
cold and windy.
Right. So there's a lot to this. And I think the public, you know, it's education. We don't educate the public enough. And as, these safety organizations and the boat clubs and things, even the fish and game organizations need to start holding a lot more, just situational awareness for the public.
Virginia in Newcastle, this is your topic, isn't it?
Yeah, actually it is. So my name's Virginia. I'm from Newcastle. And the temperature of the water is really cold. When I go up in May and early June to put the dock in at my dad's place on Moosehead, I wear a wetsuit. The water's freezing. We do keep a thermometer hanging off of the dock, and that's in a relatively shallow spot, so we know that it's colder deeper out. My husband also works at a boatyard, and I just asked him the other day, I'm like, please, when you go out to sea trial a boat, wear a life jacket, because God forbid, you go overboard, you won't make it to shore. I mean, the water is cold out there well into July, and I wear a down jacket in May and June out on the water.
Virginia, thanks for your call. We have an email from Peg. In Maryland, I was taught it is a personal flotation device. What is the difference between a PFD and a life preserver?
It's the same thing. It's just Ford Chevy, you know.
So I want to quick get this in before we run out of time. What kind of new technology is there that's becoming more commonplace?
There's a lot of new items out there. Some of the big ones right now for boating, and you can also use these smaller devices for hiking and different things. But they're called PLBs and EPIRBs. EPIRBs are the emergency satellite beacons you have on your vessels, and some are manually activated, some are water activated. But if you go overboard, you take it with you, or if you God forbid you sink or whatever, it activates itself. It sends an emergency satellite beacon to the Coast Guard. And the PLBs, the personal locator beacons, you can wear those on your life jacket. You can wear those in your jacket when you're hiking or what have you. And if you get into trouble, it made me think of the lady who got trapped there recently in a ravine in Hawaii. Now, had she had a PLB on, she might have been rescued a lot sooner, because that signal would have been a satellite signal.
Something people don't think about as well is a whistle.
Yeah.
Get yourself a Fox 40, because those, you can blow a whistle even when it's soaking wet. And then that way you're not using your voice, and those whistles just keep blowing it,
and
even if you don't have it.
It's mandatory on all Type 1 PFDs for offshore that they have a flashing beacon light and a whistle attached to it now.
An email from Perrin. I am curious what your caller suggests concerning an older parent who continues to drive a motorboat on a lake even when they're 80 years old and hard of hearing and slower to react and get around physically. It is so hard to find a way to tactfully suggest they stop driving the boat, and I don't want to have to resort to hiding boat keys all summer. Any suggestions?
You know, I would just say if they're following the rules and they're finding their way home, I mean, more power to them. I mean, that's one of the thrills of life, is to be able to get out there on the water for us. And if they're not showing any signs of, poor skills, then make sure they have what they need and turn them loose.
We have an email from Sherry. Acadia National Park is always in need of lifeguards. June through Labor Day, check usajobs.gov. Also be aware of riptides and double riptides at Popham Beach and other sites along the main coast. On an incoming tide, I was caught in a double riptide 2 summers ago at Popham Beach. Thank goodness for the lifeguards on duty and a very alert visitor who saw that I was in trouble. So lifeguards can use an extra set of eyes as well.
Always.
Definitely.
Yeah, thank you, Sherry, for your email. It's going to be our last email. I apologize to those of you whose questions I didn't get to. We're out of time. And thank you for our guests in the studio. Susie Bocan-Fuso is head swim coach at the Casco Bay branch of the YMCA of Cumberland County. Carrie Bonifant is CEO and instructor trainer at Lighthouse Health and Safety, an American Red Cross licensed training provider. And Captain Scott Bartlett is Director of Operations for Freedom Boat Club of Maine. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as all sorts of resources, at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.